ends up getting tangled up big time with Rob Lowe. Now Howell shoved him over. Howell wants to take this outside. Now he wants Jay Ely. Jarrell Martin playing peacekeeper. Dave Barlow's come off the bench to try and separate them. Jay Ely's still going for it. Montrezl Howell's been restrained by three men, and this one is kicked off into ugly scenes. Now what's happening here? Montrezl is having some words with one of the fans. He's having words with the fans here. Now someone's come from the... There's fans pushing and showing Montrezl Howell. And now this is turning into a really nasty scene. Some fans caught side were having some words with Montrezl Howell. And now there's pushing and shoving. This is disgusting.
You're 100% right.
This is an absolute disgrace.
Well, they're not scenes that we want to see in the NBL. They're scenes that, honestly, we haven't seen in the NBL, at least that I can remember.
Jeez, what on earth happened on Sunday afternoon at John Cain Arena? The affray at JCA, as Mick Randall, I think, so succinctly put it. The immediate, of course, comparison to what we see was the Malice at the Palace. And I must admit, on the call that you heard, I did make allusions to it. But I implore everybody, first of all, before I introduce my good friend Matt McQuaid, go back and actually watch the Malice at the Palace, because if you do, it makes what happened on Sunday look like a tickle fight. Julian Marcus and Matt McQuaid with you on the roundtable. Matty, it's never dull. The NBL, we say it every single week. It's never, ever dull.
True, and I think this one was even wilder, this round. It was just crazy, particularly capped off by that. I had exactly the same thoughts as you, Malice in the Palace, but then I also sort of thought back to some of the, the fan interactions that have taken place, not too many, and not especially serious as far as the NBL is concerned, thankfully, over the years. That one was, particularly nasty, though. And, there's question marks about, the fan interaction and all of that. It does tend to happen in the NBA because obviously they've got the seats on the court, basically, similar to what United does, similar to what Illawarra does, for that matter. And the Sydney Kings. So they've got that. So they're close ups. And you can say the same thing for the Cairns Convention Centre, although there's no courtside seats on the floor as such. They are extremely close to the bench of both benches of both teams, right? So, yeah, it's you don't want to see it. But you're right. It kind of reminded me of that infamous night in Detroit and all those years. It's a long, long time ago, featuring none other than former Sydney King, if only for four games, Stephen Jackson. So, because I went back and had a look at it again and realized, oh my God, there's Stephen. And, it was quite funny to think that, obviously he was a kid when he was playing for the Kings, and that only lasted, as I said, four games, I think it was. He broke his foot in Adelaide and that was the end of him. So in the NBL, but it was wild, it was crazy, it was dangerous. It's something that's completely not on, and we're going to talk about it quite extensively on what's a really big show. It's, as you say, never dull.
No, it's always entertaining, and particularly Adelaide games. It was CSPN's Kane Pittman actually put it out there yesterday. This was before all that went down. This was with the incidents with Harold and Martin in the third quarter, that Adelaide games are never boring, for good or for bad. And, well, where do we begin? Of course, we've got to begin there. But first, before we even do begin, an apology for one Simon Mitchell, who unfortunately cannot join us on this week's edition of The Roundtable. He's got a family matter to attend to, and we wish him well. But I must admit, Matt, when all of that happened, I thought, how on earth is he going to be able to speak about all of this? Turns out the answer is not to turn up.
He was very apologetic, Simon, as he is. I mean, he's a great guy, and we love Simon, and really looking forward to having him on the show. But yeah, it that and a couple of other things that happened during this round. It's what we wanted to get into was the whole thing around Southeast Melbourne, which we will at a later stage with Simon. Just about the whole situation, how it all came about with Mike Kelly leaving, and then the interim coach Sam McKinnon, then obviously, how he got Josh King, and then there's been this turnaround for the season. So, yeah, well, we'll talk about all that at a later show. I think his timing was actually very good as it turns out, because he wouldn't have been able to say very much in his role as GM of basketball, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
No, I dare say his comments as a just an interested observer, as he would have been the last time he was on the round table, versus what he could have said in this situation, would be vastly different. But we look forward to having Simon on at a later date. But we've got to talk about this thing here off the top, because, I mean, yesterday in a vacuum, we had what happened in Melbourne, and then we had Bateman's 50-piece, and we'll get to that a little bit later on. James Bateman dropping 51 points on the Perth Wildcats. Just a strange day, but we've got to start with what happened in Melbourne. And I said off the top that the obvious comparisons were, you know, the Malice in the Palace, and certainly in the heat of the moment, that's where my mind went to on the call. Then you actually go back and look at the Malice in the Palace, and my goodness, I actually forgot just how bad that incident was. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, go and have a look at the Netflix documentary that they did on the Malice at the Palace. I saw that Sunday night, and geez, it was a fantastic piece of storytelling. But that being said, it was, as I put it there on the court, it was disgraceful scenes. It was a day of disgrace. And there's a lot of moving parts to this, Matt McQuaid, because the fan incident is one thing, but there were a few incidents that led up to the powder keg exploding. And I can give you a perspective from being in the arena, and you can give us the perspective for what you saw at home. So I want to start with what you saw as things led up to. We'll go through the incidents one by one, and I want to start with the third quarter and Montrezl Harrell's incident with Kyle Bowen, and it was followed up by Jarrell Martin's little tug of Kyle Bowen on the way through as well, which really set the scene for what was a explosive environment. The first incident, Montrezl Harrell with Kyle Bowen, Matt. What was your take when you saw that live? What did you think the punishment should have been?
I thought an unsportsmanlike, clearly, but I don't think it was as bad as what you might have seen in the stadium. I'm not sure where you're sitting these days at John Cain, but when I looked at it, yeah, it was high contact, but it wasn't what I've seen a million times worse. I really have. It's not. I looked at it initially and thought, yeah, it's an unsportsmanlike. There didn't appear to be a play on the ball, which is kind of your baseline for unsportsmanlike fouls. But other than that, I thought, you know, he grazed his head. He didn't take a shot at his head. So let's just put that in perspective, right? So that's one thing. And then, I mean, look, Jarrell's one. Jarrell's not the type. Jarrell's not a dirty player. Never has been, never will be. It wasn't a great look, but it wasn't. Again, it's not, you know, punishable by death or anything like that. I think it kind of did set the tone because clearly there was some frustration there. And I guess, and we'll get into, you know, Montrez and his attitude later on, but that it did kind of set off. But I didn't think, as I said, from my perspective, you know, someone who's been watching this thing since day one, I've seen a million times worse. I really have. So it probably set the tone, sure. But in terms of, you know, the punishment for it, yeah. I mean, I think there was a little bit of overreaction going on there.
I'll be able to give you a perspective from in the arena and from what I saw when I looked back at the pictures. And all three incidents looked 20 times worse live in the arena than they actually did when you look at it back.
Yeah.
All three of them looked...
In the moment.
Yeah,
in
they
the
looked so much worse.
That. Yeah, I get that. Absolutely.
I was actually startled. I was surprised at how different it looked when I watched the vision back on Sunday night. I thought, did I watch a completely different game? Because it looked so vastly different. In the arena and where we are at Melbourne United games, we're behind the retired jerseys in the top of the arena. So we are on the baseline at the top of the arena, the gantry as I like to call it, alongside Gaze, Copeland, and all the legends. So watching the incident, it looked like, first of all, in the first instance, it looked as if Montrezl Harrell clipped Kyle Bowen in the back of the head. Mm. And from what I saw, I thought, it's got to be an ejection. Surely got to be an ejection. Mm. Not when you realize when you actually see what the incident was, it barely even flicked his hair.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
So that's the first instance, but I think it also may go a bit of a ways to explaining the heightened tension in the stadium. because the United bench were up in arms about it. And then it follows up with, and like you said, Jarrell Martin is the last guy that's going to play dirty. He's just not that guy. But it looked like a very cynical foul that he put on Kyle Bowen and thought, well, unsportsmanlike. And that one was called.
Yep.
When you look at the Martin incident versus the Montrez incident, I'm surprised that they didn't go the unsportsmanlike foul road.
Yep.
And I think it should have been. And my gripes with the official yesterday go quite deep, and that's part of it. But again, looking at it on the vision versus in the arena, it was like two different incidents altogether. So you could see it developing. And it reminded me of a couple of weeks ago in the throwdown. I'll say a couple of weeks ago, it was over a month ago now, when United, funnily enough, had that period of about 6 minutes where they completely lost their mind. It was very similar. It was, and this time, Montrezl Harrell was playing the role of Chris Golding, and playing the role of Rob Lowe, I guess by default, would have to be Jarrell Martin, even though horses aren't for courses in this particular instance. But it really did have that feel about it. And when we went into three-quarter time, we think, okay, well, there's certainly some spice about it. Both sides are jawing at each other. But there was a really uneasy feeling in the building. And we even commented on that at halftime on the broadcast, that it just felt strange. The game felt strange because at the same time, it felt like Melbourne should both be further in front and Adelaide should be closer. But then the incident in the fourth quarter, and it started with Rob Lowe getting tangled up with Montrezl Harrell. Looking at it live, and from, again, our position, we are face on with that particular basket closest to us. It did look like Lowe dragged him down. It looked like that live. I don't know how that was missed. But it also looked like Montrezl Harrell kicked out. From where we were sitting, it looked like he kicked out at Rob Lowe, and that's what set things off. That was what Melbourne United thought as well. When you look at the vision back, it tells a very different story. And that, again, goes back to this overarching theme that what it looked like in the building versus what it looked like on television were two very different stories, and thus I think goes a way to explaining why the, at least when it comes to the players, you know, we'll get onto the idiot in a moment, but when it comes to the players, why the tension was so heightened. How did you see it?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, look, Shay Illy coming in to kind of remonstrate after that Harrell Rob Lowe entanglement, if you like. Obviously, that kind of set the fuse, it kind of lit the fuse a little bit, I thought, because then after that, it was pretty much, you know, an all in, and players remonstrating with one another, whatever. Clearly, Harrell was out of line to a degree, because look, you get pulled down, it was a bit sneaky, he contributed to it a little bit. Rob Lowe has been known to do stuff like that over the years, but it's not, I guess, from Harrell's perspective, he probably figures, look, he's putting me in danger, so that's not on. And look, I don't know what was in his head. What I do know is what he said to his teammates afterwards, and that is that, or not afterwards, actually, just before he got ejected, and that was that, you know, he kind of lost his cool, and it was on him. And so I appreciate that. I appreciate him saying that. But he has had a tendency to be one of these players that when everything's up and running and they're hitting shots and it's fun and games at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, he's, you know, joking around with kids. He's you know, high-fiving in the crowd, and they absolutely adore him, and why not? But then when the chips are down and when things are not going his way, he tends to, so far, and again, I'm only saying this from afar, it's just what I see. I look at him and think, dude, you need to calm the you-know-what down, because it's not a good look when you've got, it's almost like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. You know, on the one hand, everyone loves him when he's jovial and he's entertaining and he's a showman and we know all that stuff. That's great. What we saw on Sunday was a guy that was pissed off, that was frustrated. He wasn't playing well. Melbourne were the better team by a long way. Adelaide weren't defending well at all, which we'll get to in a moment. And it just wasn't going their way. And they felt like Melbourne were too physical, which is the same thing that happened the last time these two teams played, if you recall, where, you know, Melbourne just blew Adelaide out. And part of it was the fact that they are probably the most physical team in the league, and you've got to be prepared. You've got to know it. You've got to be prepared for it. So I think there's that level of frustration. There's an attitude adjustment that needs to occur with him. And like I said, I give him a lot of credit because he was ironically mic'd up. So he heard what he said to his players, and he admitted that he needs to be better, and he absolutely does need to be better. So that was that. And then obviously, look, Shay Ely, talk about stay out of it, but then I get it. He's protecting his own guy. That's his teammate. And that's, you know, that's going to happen. But the next, and then the next part is really what we're talking about here. You know, as you said, the malice of the palace in Detroit all those years ago wasn't at that level, but it had, look, it could have gotten really out of hand. And we've, you know, today found out a few more things about the incident, which will, you know, gives a level of clarity and actually confirms my feelings about the stuff that was said. And I knew one of the things was racial, but, you know, let's get into that now because, things just got from bad to worse. And then obviously they both, Ely and Harold, get ejected, and which was the right call.
Which clearly would have happened anyway. I mean, particularly in Howell's case, yeah, that was always going to happen.
Could have happened anyway. But then what happened with the fan base, and I'm going to talk about someone else as well in a moment, what happened with that fan base was just unacceptable. It was absolutely unacceptable.
So from there, and again, you look to draw comparisons with the malice of the palace. Yeah. Montrezl Harrell went straight to the bench.
I can give you some NBL comparisons, right?
Yeah.
So there's a couple. Obviously, both with the Sydney Kings, for me specifically, that I remember, because I was there for both games as well. They were both on the road. The most recent one was obviously the one that people remember, which was Marcus Thornton getting a beer poured over him at the sandpit by some old buffhead in a corporate suite, in a corporate box on the court, right? I mean, I think people remember one.
Yeah.
So that's one. The one that people don't, well, not necessarily will remember, and again, this just comes from me being incredibly old, 1992 at the Newcastle Entertainment Centre. It was the Falcons against the Kings. It was the, final game of the season, or second last game of the season in 92. And Mark Dalton was getting, like, he was getting abused. There was a corporate box immediately behind the King's bench. Mark Dalton was getting abused all night long by some very drunk patrons. And he ended up he had a water bottle and he kind of put it up to his shoulder and squirted back at the corporate box. And then all hell broke loose because after that, they threw a couple of cans of beer at his head. So, which again, resulted in them getting tossed, those patrons getting tossed. That and then maybe if you want to talk about not necessarily fan interaction, but it pretty much was, when Steve Breeny, the head coach of Canberra at the time, headbutted Damien Keogh in 1989, game one of the NBL semi-final series, and Breeny got ejected. And as he walked out alongside the stand that was kind of behind the basket there at the State Sports Centre, was showered. And I literally mean showered with every piece of garbage known to mankind. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like it. So those are the three things I remember. I'm sure people listening in other states probably have other times they remember. But that's the worst. The Mark Dalton thing was the worst one I'd seen personally. And I'm sure there's been others. And there's always a lot of, I mean, in the Illawarra game, you know, somebody was they were in the seats, the they call them Hollywood seats on the sideline there. There was a lot of chatter at Kuat Noi and at Bull Qual. I saw it, and you know, it was obviously nothing too bad, but it's, you know, fans talking junk to players. Look, they paid their money, and as long as it's not personal, as long as it's not racial, as long as it's not derogatory in any way, then that's fine. But obviously what happened here was completely different and completely beyond the pale, quite frankly, particularly as Code Sports has reported. So what was actually said was especially one particular thing. Because I when I looked at it, I wondered why Kendrick Davis went absolutely berserk. I couldn't figure it out. The only thing that came to mind when this happened was that someone had said something to him of a racial type. And I thought, and there were those rumors going around. Turns out they were right, that he was racially abused. It wasn't the worst word in the English language, in my opinion, the N-word, but it was something very close. And it was completely disgusting and out of line. And again, you know, just nothing we want to see in this country. We just don't. So, yeah. But, I mean, getting into, and then that guy, particularly the hoodie guy, you know, first of all, pushes Matt Weston. Then Dejan Vasiljevic gets involved. He apparently pushes him. I must admit, I didn't quite see that. Saw the Matty Weston thing. And then there were a lot of things said. And the worst part about it was, apart from the fact that it's just completely inappropriate that fans get involved with a team like that, there were a lot of kids around. And it was something that was brought up in the broadcast as well. That to me was the most dangerous aspect of it, because tempers were high. These are very large human beings, these athletes. Anything could have happened. Hoodie guy who should be absolutely ashamed of himself, in my opinion, should be banned. Look, a minimum, you don't want to say for life, but quite frankly, when you get to the point, yeah, I know. That's the thing. I do struggle with that, because it's a massive punishment. But then, yeah, if you're going to set a precedent, which they should, then that's what should happen. So, you know, Mick Randall, friend of the program, reported on the one hand, a fan, you might have to be part of this, but a fan yelled at Harrell, you know, quote, "You've got a shit attitude. That's why you're not in the NBA, which is why Montrez arced up, rightly so. And then the Kendrick Davis reaction, Code Sports is reporting, it's as bad as using the N-word, quite frankly, because it's just racial and derogatory, and just there's no place for it. So, yeah, I mean, from that perspective, then that guy, at a minimum, should be barred. Look, I'll say 10 years, 20 years minimum, and then you're probably right saying life, which, you know, some people might say that's too extreme, but...
No, he put his hands on a player. Look, at the end of the day, he put his hands on a player, end of story.
A player and a member of the team as well in Matty Weston. And, yeah, I thought it was instructive that he tried to hide his face with it. He knew.
What a fool. I mean, good one, champ. You're going to pull your hoodie up after you've just been shown on national TV.
Yeah, I know. Everyone saw it. He's a complete idiot.
Real bright spark.
He's clearly a moron. So, yeah. And look, I don't know whether he's a season ticket holder or what, or he just was there for the night. But regardless, it was just beyond the pale. It was ridiculous.
Looking at it in the arena, and again, you don't get the full context when you're watching it live as opposed to watching it on TV. It looked like initially, Montrez is absolutely steaming. Some words have been exchanged, and then things kicked off from there. Now, it was obvious, people don't respond like that unless something particularly glaring was said. I didn't see Matt Weston being shoved, because what I saw was just limbs flying in all directions.
And that's right,
Kendrick Davis falling over and being restrained almost as if it was being acted out and blocked out for a stage fight. It was quite remarkable how Kendrick Davis just... The look in his eyes when you see the vision back was quite scary.
Yeah.
And you just saw arms flailing. And when you see that leaking over into the seats, it was horrifying. Utterly horrifying. And what I heard particularly this morning, and this was just a feeling of... I just felt sad leaving the arena yesterday because I knew what was coming, is that... There were some uneducated comments, particularly from some sections this morning, in radio shows and some aspects of particularly Melbourne media who aligned more with footy and cricket, who used this as an opportunity for a free kick. And that was just the thought I had. It's like, here we go.
But you're going to get that, Julian. You know what it's like. I mean, it's fun. I mean, look, football, especially in Melbourne, football's king will always be, as long as the AFL exists, it is the sport. But there is still, and Sydney media is like this as well. There's always been this kind of, it's like almost that they're worried about basketball being, sort of not, they're never going to, look, the NRL in Sydney is king. It always will be as well, right? And so it is a bit funny that, you know, over the years, I know what you're talking about because I have seen this, where people have had a go at the NBL for a variety of reasons and only because there's a worry that it's going to be more popular or, particularly in the boom years in 91, 92, I remember a lot of the radio stations were very critical of the NBL and would, they'd go out of their way because the Kings at that stage were the hottest thing in the, especially in 92, they were the hottest thing in the town.
Because you're only allowed to like one sport per season.
Yeah. And that's, so I get exactly what you're saying, but I don't think it affects, it won't affect the league. You can get annoyed about stuff like that. And I get annoyed as well, but yeah, I'm not concerned about that so much.
There's going to be a lot to come out of it. And it still continues as we're recording. The NBL have asked for submissions from Montrezl Harrell, from Shea Illy, and from Dave Barlow, who was the first off the bench to try and break things up. They've been asked for submissions for, I guess, a please explain, as of 6 p.m. on Tuesday. Kendrick Davis has also been asked for a please explain, and it will continue on from there.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's got anything to explain about other than, particularly given Code Sports reporting what was said to him. Yep. So his reaction was very understandable. I guess the final question is, what's the aftermath? What, who gets what suspension? I found it funny. Andrew Bogut tweeted out, or whatever the hell you call it these days, about the Aaron Baines incident with 40 in the dressing room, and when he got ejected, and then obviously, put hands on 40, etc. And Bogues made the point that it was 5 weeks for one of the in comparing it to the Harrell situation, and saying, one of these people got 5 weeks. So with the inference being, Montrez should get 5 weeks as well. And people have already said this, that he's been such a great addition to the league. He's put eyeballs on the league. He's been a little bit of a golden calf as far as the league's concerned because he's putting bums on seats. So, as a league, can they afford to have him out for any significant period of time? So, I've had this conversation, just in general, about the punishment that's handed out to players. And I've always said that the NBL, for the most part, has been light on as far as punishment is concerned. But the question is, what Montrez did, how much is it actually worth? I mean, did he put players in danger? You can maybe argue that. I don't know. He lashed out, clearly. But again, I've seen a lot worse in my time. So, yeah, and then Shea Illy, coming in as that third man in, but then he was obviously protecting his own player or trying to. And then obviously the situation with the fan. I think that's a separate situation completely. And again, I can't see how any sanctions come to any players because of that. But if you're talking about, because the fans should not have been involved.
No.
And that's the bottom line, which we've just discussed. So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, is my takeaway from that. I'm not sure, what punishment he'll, look, it'll be minimum a fine. I would say there'd be some sort of week suspension, but then it'll probably be, suspended sentence, that type of thing, because the NBL does that a lot. And like I said, I think they've been soft over the years. I think they have. And in the way they've judged these things. I would like to have seen them a bit tougher, but anyway, we'll see what happens.
To play devil's advocate, I would say two games for Montrez with one potentially suspended and everybody else gets fined.
Yeah. I think that's fair call.
I think that's probably where things are going. Yep. A couple of things I wanted to bring up before we move on is, one, when it comes to the celebrity row seats, and particularly those ones between benches.
You mean the celebrities that no one knows who they are?
Well, yeah. I love...
the Reebok seats.
Oh, jeez. That is always something. The comment section in that is always wonderful.
It's hilarious, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Celebrities that not even their own family can identify. But when it comes to those particular areas, what do you think will be, at least in the short term, do you anticipate any changes as far as how those seats are distributed, or is there anything that needs to change, particularly when it comes to, you know, I guess United will be more in the spotlight than anybody else?
Yeah, as I said to you, Julian, and back to my earlier point that it's a very rare thing that happened, right? Now, that's not to say that they should be doing everything in their power to ensure it doesn't happen again, but I think no matter what you do, there's always going to be some idiot that will wind up that maybe has a bit too much to drink, thinks that he can talk to these players, that he you know, they're feeling their oats a little bit when they shouldn't. At least, you know, as I said, it's okay to boo, it's okay to cheer, it's okay to even talk trash if you know what you're talking about. And the problem, you know, if you don't know what you're talking about and you just blurt something out because you think it sounds smart and it's actually the height of stupidity, then no. I honestly guess I'd ask the question, what can they do? You know, I mean, that's the thing. It's how can you restrict? You can't restrict. If people pay their money. Do you know how much those seats cost in Sydney? Yeah. $825 a pop.
That's what makes it even more bizarre. Why would you drop that much money to go and get yourself thrown out and shamed publicly?
Yeah, and maybe that's part of the problem. Or maybe the guy, hoodie dude, got the ticket given to him on the night. Who knows? We don't know.
Geez, he'd be happy if you were the mate that gave him the ticket.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost a given. Most people in this country, I mean, look, there's always the dicker. There's just is always going to be, you know, certain people that are going to drink too much or say something. And, you know, it's rare that it happens that close to the court. The biggest thing about the NBL, what makes it completely different to pretty much every other code, is how close spectators come to the court itself. Like, literally, those people in those seats are... they may as well be on the court for all intents and purposes, right? So, yeah, I mean, there's that's always going to be there. And look, it's happened in the NBA as well. People have, I mean, you know, Russell Westbrook had his situations many, many years ago. Cedric Maxwell of the Boston Celtics went up into the stands and chased a fan pre Malice in the Palace. This is like the early 80s. And that had said something to him racially. So, yeah, I mean, it's always going to happen. You just hope it doesn't happen for a very, very long time. And again, I come back to what I said before. We're not talking about something that happens every week. We're not even talking about something that happens, you know, once a year. I apart from the ones I remember, which are all Sydney-based, and again, I'm sure there must be some more that people who listen to us from other states remember, but it's not like there's an epidemic of it, is what I'm saying. So I don't think there's anything they need to do other than, look, maybe what they should do is put in every stadium a couple of security guards behind every bench.
Certainly the away bench.
So yeah, that's right, the away bench. And maybe that's what you need to do, just show the flag a little bit from a security standpoint.
And I also saw some commentary, probably shouldn't even mention it, but just... some people saying, oh, you know, typical United fan base. Like, are you serious? They're putting this on the... And I saw a few people yesterday.
It was
too many people not to bring up. This is representative of the Melbourne United fan base. Are you honestly serious about this?
That's ridiculous. And that's what I've said, you know, and that's why I hasten to kind of... Yeah, you don't want to overreact to some jerk that did what he did, some absolute imbecile, because it isn't representative. of any fan base. I mean, you know, look, people have been saying stuff about Perth fans for years. I've been there. I know what they're like. But they don't, you know, they look, in my experience, yeah, they're vicious. They're tough, but not in such a way where they're calling people, you know, racial names or racial epithets or, you know, anything derogatory other than, you know, they don't like a certain person for the way he plays and the fact he wears another uniform. That's it.
I mean, if you want to talk about, if I was playing, I wouldn't particularly be worried about going into JCA. I'd be more upset going over to Perth or going down to Wollongong. I mean, with those fans on top of you at the WEC, and we'll talk about that in a bit, that can be a madhouse. So,
For now.
We've spent enough time on this now. Hopefully, we've all learned a bit and we can continue on. By the way, January is the next meeting between Adelaide and Melbourne. So early January, the Adelaide Entertainment Centre.
Wow,
get
look out.
Your popcorn ready now.
Yeah, look, there is a lot to talk about and a lot about where this league is, about ethics and morals and protecting their players and all that kind of stuff. And we need to get into it because obviously what we're talking about is what came down the pike today, which was the outcome of the single person tribunal in which Montrezl Harrell of the Adelaide 36ers was suspended for 3 games and received nearly $4,000 worth of fines. And Kendrick Davis, also of the Adelaide 36ers, was suspended for 2 games based on a charge of, quote, inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. So there's been a lot, obviously, in social media that's gone on and a lot of very, very fired up and, quite frankly, pissed off people right now about the league, about how this tribunal process ran and the outcome of it. So, yeah, look, let's get into it.
We'll start with the process itself. And the first point of contention for me is that it was closed to all media.
Mm.
Which goes against what we have usually seen in these scenarios. That was the first sort of
that was strange. And let me just, before we go on, just let me talk to that a bit because I've got a bit of history with that. So when Josh Childress was with the Sydney Kings, and everybody remembers that incident with Jesse Wagstaff and the outcome of that, the actual tribunal I was a part of, at the time I was working as a Kings media and communications manager, and so it was my responsibility to basically manage the media aspect. The media was invited to the actual tribunal, not so much the actual room itself, but outside, so that they could ask questions immediately. And there were quite a few there. From memory, I think Channel 9 was there with a camera as well. So that was, I guess, it wasn't to do with a fan, obviously, but it was very high profile at the time. You remember, you know, I had Josh going around to all sorts of media outlets at the time. I remember most memorably going out to Fox Sports studios at Artarmon and talking about the whole situation and what had happened. And then obviously the racial abuse he copped online because of what happened. So that I can tell you, that's why it was kind of very, very unusual for them to completely leave the media out of it. Was an eye-opener for me, having been a part of it. Now, this is in the pre-Larry Kestelman era, so it was managed differently, obviously. You know, different parties were running the league at the time. But, yeah, I mean, I was actually part of that situation with Josh and being the media manager of the Sydney Kings at that time. So this is where I was very stunned that they actually went down this path, the NBL.
I just don't understand what the positives are by going down this road with that process.
Yeah.
Because immediately you have the questions of transparency.
Transparency, yeah, 100%.
We're already talking about a situation. Let's bring the elephant into the room and invite him to dance. The whole scenario has been around this happening with Melbourne United. And the perception around the fan base and around the competition, rightly or wrongly, that there's one rule for United and another rule for everybody else. And that has really come to a head throughout this entire process. I would love to hear an explanation why.
Yeah.
Just tell us why.
You won't.
Because we're not going to hear it, of course.
No. And this is the thing, right? Larry Kestelman, and we'll get on to him, and I'll talk about him at length in a minute. He's not the majority owner of Melbourne United anymore, but he does have a part of it. So that's number one. He also has a part of the Tasmania Jack Jumpers. So it's important to remember that as well. But
Brisbane,
I think he's got a part of it as well. So he's been trying to sell it, obviously. He sold the majority of it to that consortium. But again, as you say, transparency is one thing. The other thing is this, what appears to most people to be an obvious, massive conflict of interest. And it leaves the league open to accusations of impropriety in that they're not, how do I word this, considered by the fan base, a majority of the fan base, certainly not Melbourne fans, but a lot of the fan base, they're not considered to be fair and impartial as a league while these obvious conflict of interests are happening. Now, again, whether that's true or not, it's the perception. And perception sometimes is, what is it, 90% reality, as they say, or whatever the percentage is. But that's the issue the league's got. Now, the league obviously has been going great guns in the last few years. And the majority of that is down to Larry and his input and his money. And, you know, I've always said what Frank Lowy did for the A-League is what Larry Kestelman, when the A-League was actually up there, maybe not so much now, but at the time, let's not even say the A-League, let's say Australian soccer full stop. This is what Larry Kestelman did for really not just the NBL, but for Australian basketball full stop. And I said for years before he came on board, and the NBL was dead, was just about dead and buried before he bought it. So again, I want to absolutely be crystal clear on this. He is to be absolutely applauded for what he's done in saving Australian basketball, quite frankly. He did. So, and I've got enormous time for him for doing that, because I've always said for years and years and years that we needed that guy, and we got him, and we are so fortunate for it, as people like me who absolutely adore the sport. So, but again, you get back to now he's running the league. He's got a piece of some other teams, in particular Melbourne, which he bought after he sold Dodo for about $200+ million, whatever it was back in the day. So whether he likes it or not, he is connected to that club. And when this happened, and again, the lack of transparency, not having the media around, people just look at the league and they don't respect it. And I hate that, you know, and maybe people will say we're going a bit overboard, but I don't think so. Based on what I've seen on social media, it's been just, you know, they're not reading the room, the NBL. Larry's not reading the room here. And, you know, and we'll get into one thing in particular I think is absolutely disgusting. And that is the whole business around what was said, again, allegedly to Kendrick Davis. But it's kind of like, well, they pushed it aside. They haven't even, it wasn't heard by any United staff, therefore it didn't happen. I mean, can you give me an absolute break? That is an absolute disgrace. And it's, again, they're not reading the room.
So the punishments, as you mentioned at the top, Montrezl Harrell, 3-game suspension. You receive fines totaling $3,685. Kendrick Davis, a 2-game suspension. And this is for the charge of inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. The Harrell charges are one for striking, which he received a fine. Charge of engaging in a melee and a charge of inappropriate grabbing or handling of a spectator. Now, we still have not heard what the punishments are for the spectators that were involved. And I use spectators because
Four of them got kicked out. Yeah,
exactly. There's four of them involved. The fact that we still have not heard that and this punishment was announced first. It just feels to me, watching this all play out, and I've been out of the fishbowl for a couple of weeks out of Melbourne, you know, doing other things. It does seem to me that it just, for lack of a better phrase, you're looking at controlling the messaging. It's just been a series of unforced errors to me. You should have gone with the fan punishment announcement first. Why media were closed off from this process, I would love an explanation, because to me, what's the benefit? What's the benefit of that? It's been a mess.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, I will say one thing to be fair, and those who saw the News Corp papers today, the cross-court section, which is an entire page on the league, which is great. Our good friends Matt Logan, Michael Randall put that together. There is the question put to Larry about the punishment, and what Matt and Michael have written, it's unknown what punishment the fans in question will receive for their role in the altercation, but Kestelman's stance on poor behaviour, it's simple. It's a privilege to sit courtside, and it's a privilege to be that close to athletes, so that privilege needs to be respected, Kestelman told Cross Court. Not many sports afford you the privilege to be that close. For as long as I'm around, it, the NBL, will continue to be a family-first product. You know, so I guess he's saying the right things in that instance. And again, to be fair, it's probably going to be an easy situation when you know who the players are. I think that's part of the, you know who the players are, you know that side of it. What you don't know, with one exception, and because it's been, you know, the name's been, one of the spectators involved, the name was made public. But the other three, and I think one of them is Hoodie Dude, they still haven't been able to determine who it is. But so I guess that's the next, I can understand why that punishment comes, or that whatever happens, and we don't know if anything's going to happen, to those fans / spectators, because they've still got to determine who they were. That's my read on that, with the exception of one guy. That's my read on the situation, as far as the fans are concerned.
Would a statement of, when we find out who this guy is, he will be banned for life from our games, would that have gone away to quelling things, or does that prejudice the whole process?
Prejudice, you can't say that unless you've actually got knowledge of who it is, right? You could potentially word a statement without being specific about a ban, right? As in, we're going to, you know, be uncompromising in what we see to be antisocial behavior that has no place at a National Basketball League game, where the fans have clearly crossed the line. But what, unfortunately, again, when you go back to that word perception, it looks to me like it just comes across as Montrez and Kendrick are the ones that instigated the whole thing, which, quite frankly, is complete and utter bullshit. And I don't often swear on this program, but I think it needs to be said. It's crap. And again, I just think your players are your main constituents. For them to come out, for the league to come out and say, well, we didn't hear, there's no evidence it was said. It's so instructive, and I said this last week, it's so instructive when you look at when that melee started with the fans and the Adelaide players and Matty Weston, and Nick Popovich was involved in trying to, you know, keep peace between the two warring parties, as it were. But the way Kendrick Davis reacted, my first thought was, bang, someone said something racial to him. I mean, to me, it insults your intelligence to say, you know, nobody from United heard it, therefore it didn't happen. I think that's absolutely ridiculous. And it looks like they've put the onus on the players rather than the fans themselves, who were obviously, you know, look, not obviously, but I would think there was alcohol involved. I think part of it was also the atmosphere, and it had been whipped up into a frenzy with the whole situation that we've already been through. It's Melbourne-Adelaide game. There's always heightened tensions. And look, the temperature was high, and this is the outcome of it. Now, and there were things said by the fans And look, did Montrez react well to what was allegedly said to him? No. But quite frankly, Kendrick, and obviously Montrez would have heard it as well, what was, again, and I stress to emphasize, allegedly said to him is an absolute disgrace. And for that reason alone, the NBL should have taken, I just do not understand why the NBL just didn't take him at his word. I really don't. But here we are.
I'm going to read this United statement that they put out on this matter. Now, this was put out on November the 22nd. This was the second statement they put out on this whole situation. Quote, Melbourne United is aware of speculation regarding racially based, derogatory or offensive language allegedly used by spectators during last week's game against the Adelaide 36ers. Throughout our own investigation and collaboration with the NBL investigation, the club has not been made aware that any such comments have been able to be substantiated or corroborated.
Come on. That's just really poor from them. I'm really gobsmacked at that because why does Davis respond like that? I mean, look, there's trash talk and there's trash talk, right? And if it gets to a racial derogatory, super derogatory, putting him down, but particularly, you know, in the words that were used, that's how he's going to respond. You know, I mean, I've seen this before. And of course you're going to respond like that. So, again. And then the ultimate hypocrisy from the league, and this is what drives me nuts. You know, they're giving this guy, Montrezl Harrell, a three-game suspension. And yet, on the other hand, they're promoting to promote the league using, you know, social media. And what happened as a way to kind of, this is a fiery league. It's exciting. It's this, it's that. It's like, well, you can't have it both ways. On the one hand, you've basically thrown this guy under the bus. On the other hand, you're happy to use his notoriety as a former NBA Sixth Man of the Year, as a guy who, you know, brings people through the door, unquestionably, is it one of the big reasons why Adelaide's been selling out the way they have. And then on the other hand, you want to pump it up, but then you want to censure him in, you know, what I think is a completely over the top way. Yeah, did he deserve a suspension? He probably did. He did, but not for the fans thing. This is what I've got a problem with. You know, with the fans thing, he gets a 3-game suspension for that. So, it just smells to high heaven, the whole thing. It's just been poorly managed, poorly run, the process itself, you know, not having media there, you know, and just, look, they're going to toe the company line at NBL HQ. Were suspensions warranted for the fan? There's two sides to every story, and I think it's important to note that I'm sure that Adelaide will use every recourse to appeal the decision, and let's see what happens from there. But again, in a single member tribunal is another one, which is really, really strange to me.
And the fact that Adelaide have the right to appeal to a full member tribunal. So why not go to the full member
tribunal? Why not do that from the first place? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I just hate to see all this, Julian. I mean, we should be all about the league and the competition, which is phenomenal, and you know, the great things that the league has done over the last, 7 or 8 years since Larry took over. But unfortunately, the league, you know, and look, this isn't a new phenomenon, but the league has had a propensity to shoot itself in the foot on matters like this. And again, we go back to the original premise of this, and that is, it's the lack of transparency and a conflict of interest. And it's got to be fixed somehow. I don't know how, but whether Larry completely divests himself of all, and that's easier said than done, I understand, but divests himself of all interest in any of the teams, to completely separate the league from the teams.
Can the league and those teams afford that, though?
Yeah. It's just a bad look all around, isn't it?
And then I follow that up with the response from Montrezl Harrell on social media. on Monday night, quoting him, "No one else involved in the situation, huh, at NBL. Only me and KD, LOL. No players from other team, just the coach for coming off the bench, lol. Yeah, I'm good, man. Shake my head."
Yeah, yeah.
Are we going to see him back?
Yeah, well, he brought that up in, on social media, didn't he? That there was this implication that he wouldn't be back. It's three games. It's a significant punishment, especially for a player that's really done a lot for the league in his short period of time here. And look, I'm not. I want to hasten to add, as far as he's concerned, I'm not fully exonerating him by any stretch, but no. But you know, because he, and I said this last week, I mean, he has had that little Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde complex where on the one hand, when things are up and going, he's high-fiving the fans and the kids love him and the Adelaide fans go crazy for him and everything's happy and it's great. But when things aren't going so well, he does tend to, go to a different level, a different kind of energy, if you like, and which isn't good. So I'm not exonerating him from this. I'm agreeing with him 100% to say that these are the only two guys that are getting punishment for this of the suspension variety. Come on. Ridiculous. You just shake your head. It's just stuff that shouldn't happen, stuff that should have already been dealt with. The league is always talking about being more like the NBA. Well, act like it, guys. You know, be more professional. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things they need to do to get a lot better as a league. You know, they carry on about we're the second best league in the world. Well, no, you're not. And, you know, the second best league in the world wouldn't be doing things of this nature. People have had a go. Look, the AFL, as an example, is an absolute juggernaut. And people for years and years have had goes at them for the way they've handled certain things, like the Adam Goods situation as a notable example. So they're not alone in being a sporting organisation that sometimes gets things wrong. But I guess as people who love the sport and love the league, we can see that there are ways to make things better that just aren't being made better for a variety of reasons right now. And I think that's probably the thing that makes you angry or the thing that makes you shake your head.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. There's much less room for error for a sport like the NBL, a competition like the NBL, than the AFL. The AFL.
Oh, I'd agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
They're sitting on a money pit. I mean, they would need about 700 different bad decisions to see anything on the bottom line. And if you want
a juggernaut,
if you want a recent real-world example, look at the A-League.
Yeah.
You mentioned 10 years ago, they were flying high.
Yeah, the whole
decisions made by their governing body and the powers that be, it disenfranchised fans, and they're still everyone.
Yeah, I'm not saying we're at that stage. I think we are better run overall than that. But I take your point because we're not, we're never going to be the AFL. We're never going to be the NRL. What we want to be is the strongest niche sport, quite niche sport around. We can puff our chests out and say how great we are. And I've often said, I've always wanted Australian basketball to be that way because we are a powerhouse. We're a powerhouse in this region in Asia where, now we're a powerhouse globally. So we should be. But again, part of that is you've got to have the correct governance and the right governance at the top. And while I think for the most part it's been good, I think things like this tell you that there's still a hell of a lot of work to do.
Looking at the suspensions in a vacuum, but completely leave everything else out of it. Montrezl Harrell, 3 games. Kendrick Davis, 2 games. Too high, too low, just right.
Well, I think, I can't remember, I read this somewhere, but 5 games for that sort of, quote, inappropriate grabbing or dealing with a spectator. So I should mention, it's only ever happened once in NBL history that a player has been suspended for what Montrez and Kendrick are alleged to have done. Well, alleged, it's been, according to the single-member tribunal, it's been proven that they've done it, and that is, grabbing, being physical with a spectator. So 1999 at what was then called the Sydney Superdome, Ben Melmoth was playing for the Sydney Kings and went into the crowd to go after a guy who'd been trash talking in the whole. The Kings that year were, that season were pretty terrible. One of the fans was trash talking Melmoth from the stand close to where the bench was, and Melmoth went after him, grabbed him by the throat, and was choking him out. The Kings trainer, David Driscoll at the time, also went into the crowd. So Melmoth got 6 games for that, and Driscoll got 2 games for being involved in it. So it has happened before. So it's half of what that is, what that was rather. So I guess, you know, they whether or not they even remembered it, probably not, but because it was the only time it's ever happened in NBL history. So the 3 games based off that, you'd probably say, okay. But I still don't, I don't buy it because I, again, you know, it just seems too one-sided to me because, as you mentioned, we haven't heard about the whole side of the fans. And, you know, the Davis thing I think is even worse because the 2 games, look, if you grab the guy, that's one thing. But the reason, you got to think about the flip side of it, what he heard. And clearly what he heard was racial. I'm sorry. No one's going to tell me any different that that happened. I saw the guy's reaction. You know, I mean, to me, it's just a little bit of insulting our intelligence by saying, oh, no, you know, no one heard it said. So why did he absolutely lose his, you know what? It's, yeah, it's just, please. It happened. Look, just, yeah. But I think that's the issue I've got with it, is because we don't know what punishment is going to be handed out to those 4 spectators. And we need to know pretty quickly, you know, if they can figure out who these people, I'm surely to goodness, they can find that information out if they looked hard enough.
What is this going to do for Adelaide season, do you believe, after all of this destruction?
Well, we don't know. Like, obviously, there is an appeals process, so it's. Yep. I think we have to wait until that runs its course. But if it stands, then yeah. Look, I hope he returns. Number one, I think he's been great for the league. I mean, look, it's not every day you get a former Sixth Man of the Year in the NBA and who's clearly talented. Yes, he loses his cool, and yes, he's got that reputation for being fiery, but. I still think, you know, the good outweighs the bad with him. Kendrick Davis has been fantastic for them. I think he's been one of the best point guards in the league. And I don't agree with Derek Rucker putting him so low in the sorry, Ruck, you know I love you, but I don't agree with him putting him so low in his top 15. I mean, correct that he was in the 15, but he should have been a lot higher. Anyway, that's by the by. I think that one hurts probably even more than what Harrell does. But yeah, look, it's a speed bump. We just hope they come back, and look, it might really pump them up and get them super motivated for the stretch run. And Adelaide's going to become even more dangerous. So yeah, hopefully not too much. Obviously, in the short-term pain, with hopefully a bit of long-term gain.
The games that Davis will miss and Harrell as well this weekend against the Tasmania Jack Jumpers at home. And then the second game that Davis would miss is Friday next week against Brisbane in Brisbane. And then on top of that, Montrez will miss the December 8th game at home against Perth. Mm. So Tasmania and Brisbane, Tasmania at home, Brisbane on the road. If you are going to lose 2 guys of that quality, in particular Davis, because you're getting back for the Perth game,
yeah,
not the worst time to lose them.
100%. Yep. It's a really good point. So, you know, but again, then we sort of start thinking about what Montrez threatened to do, or at least implied that he may do, and that is not bother coming back, which would be, you talk about sad. That would be sad. There's no doubt. The fingers crossed he doesn't.
Yeah. I don't want to cross that bridge until we get there, but yeah. I definitely think that, well, I can almost assure you the Sixers will be in constant contact with Montrez Harrell at the moment. To try and ensure that he's okay, and as they should.
Sure.
I have no doubt about that as well.
I mean, we do know now, of course, this is in lieu of us not having a show last week, we now know the bans for the spectators. We now know how things have shaken out around that. But it did take another weird twist last week, Maddie. And I know it's a bit going over trodden ground now, but I think it still needs to be brought up that this whole thing just really felt like to me the messaging needed to be a little bit clearer.
Oh, no doubt. And I think both from the league and Melbourne United, you know, so, and I'm probably going to call them out a little bit. Thinking about it, I don't want to go over it too much. Basically what I will say, from a Melbourne perspective, what I thought was disappointing, this whole business about the racial comments, right, that Melbourne initially in a club statement came out, we didn't hear them, they didn't happen, therefore it didn't happen. Then the NBL CEO, David Stevenson, goes on the NBL podcast with Jack Heverin and basically confirms when he's talking about the tribunal process, there certainly were comments of a racial nature, so that was taken into account. So my information is that Melbourne United weren't happy about that, and asked the NBL to take the podcast down. So, which I thought was absolutely ludicrous. And I wasn't the only one. I mean, the majority owner of Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, Romy Chowdhury, said, you know, he spoke to Matt Logue for the Cross Court column in the Daily Telegraph and said, quote, he's baffled by the NBL's decision to delete a podcast in which league chief executive David Stevenson brought to light fan racism in the wake of the ugly scenes at JCA. While Melbourne United publicly stated claims Adelaide's Kendrick Davis was racially abused during the wild November 17 scenes were unable to be corroborated, the 36's guard told last week's tribunal hearing he heard racist comments, which I think anybody with common sense saw his reaction and said, yeah, it's gone beyond the pale. And as the brilliant John Casey said during his call of the Adelaide-Perth game, with our good friend Liam Santamaria did a tremendous job as well. And he was very, very, really outraged, I think is the word to use. And because about the sentences even handed out to Montrezl Harrell and Kendrick Davis, because he felt like they'd been provoked. And then, so that was one thing. And then, you know, I just felt like with what David said, and then, you know, Melbourne telling or asking the league to take it down, whichever it was. And the problem that, of course, you and I have talked about too many times is that Melbourne and the NBL are kind of looked at perception, whether it's real or not, as one and the same thing because of Larry Kestelman's 15, you know, continued part ownership of the club. And the fact that, you know, he's sitting there pretty much every home game or the majority of them, and he's a part owner. So we've talked about conflict of interest a million times. So I just felt like what Melbourne did was really try to insult our collective intelligence with that, and it did nothing to quell that perception throughout the league that there's one rule for United and another rule for every other NBL club. So, look, I got to say this. I really like Melbourne United CEO Nick Trilson. I really do. I think he's been a friend of the show. He's been on our game coverage a number of times.
Yeah, got a lot of time for him.
Especially in our previous iteration. I think he's a very smart operator, and I think he's done a terrific job. But with all due respect, in this instance, I really think he and the front office dropped the ball. And to me, it's down to what's a near fanatical protection of the club culture and their brand. You know, we're going to stick our fingers in our ears, say, la, 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 we're not listening. It didn't happen. It couldn't have been said. What they should have done was put out a statement that owned it, that took accountability, something along the lines of, we acknowledge the comments that were allegedly made, thrown only allegedly if you want, and we wish to emphasise they have absolutely no place in our club and do not in any way reflect our values as a club and an organisation. I would have had a hell of a lot more respect for United in this situation had they said that, rather than play the denial game that does nothing but insult our intelligence. I mean, that's the thing. They're just so worried about protecting their brand and their culture that, you know, to say that it didn't happen because we didn't hear it, that's just ridiculous. And look, it's one idiot out of 10,000 plus at the game. No one with any sense believes, Julian, that kind of racial language is what the vast majority of Melbourne fans or the club as a whole are about. No one's saying otherwise. to me, it was a PR failure. And that's the bottom line. So, look, let's leave it there. I mean, all I hope from this, you know, sad situation, and it was a fiasco, quite frankly, both on the court with the fans and then the process that was gone through. I thought it was handled really poorly. Let's just hope that lessons were learned and, you know, we move on.
Yeah, I think it was a learning curve. And look, you're not going to get it perfect every time, and I don't think that everybody got it perfect on this one at all.
Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, again, I said this a couple of weeks ago. If anyone from the league or Melbourne United want to come on and explain their side of it, they've got a welcome invitation, an open invitation to come on this program and just explain it to us, because that's really where I came from. It is, just explain it to me. Just explain what you're telling us. Explain your side of the story. Anyway, it's done now. Montrez is back this week. We can all move on. But that being said, it has, and we called that this would likely happen, it has had an impact on Adelaide for the last couple of weeks. Now, whether or not it continues, that remains to be seen, but there's no question it has flattened the drink, so to speak, for Adelaide 36ers and what they had been producing up until that season. Look, here's the thing. That day against Melbourne, they were getting their butt kicked no matter what happened on the court. They were going to get their butt kicked anyway. But it has had an effect, Matt.
Well, that, and of course, as if things can't get any worse, you lose one of your leading scorers, Dejan Vasiljevic, to that hamstring injury, which he was interviewed during that game on the weekend against Perth and kind of mentioned that I got from that he could be anywhere from, he hasn't even started running yet. He could be anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks away. And look, DJ's had that reputation sometimes of being a gunner, as we know, and maybe taking some bad shots. But I still think, you'd rather him in the team than without, right? So that's hurt them. Obviously Kendrick Davis came back. I mean, what a performance against Perth. The two of the great little men of the league just putting on an absolute show. It was fantastic to see. I mean, Bryce gets his 49 and Kendrick turns around and does something that no 36er ever has done, which is tally 37 points and 11 assists in a single game, which I kind of, it's one of those, and there might have been, ones that had done it differently, but it's hard to believe when you consider, the history of that club and the people that have played and have been a part of that club for so many years and some of the all-time greats that we've ever seen in this country. So that just shows, I've had enormous time for him, from day one. So he's going to have to carry a load. I mean, probably the disappointing one for me has been Jarrell Martin. I just think he obviously came in overweight, out of shape, has struggled to get back into game shape. He's still struggling with the speed of the league this time, being away from it for a couple of years. I think it's, that's been a problem, and he just hasn't had the level of impact I would have thought. I think that foot injury really hurts big guys particularly and takes a long, long time to get over. So that's hurt them as well. And then you throw out the fact they're still not playing defense at a championship level. But obviously getting Trez back is going to be huge. But then, they're going to be without Dejan Vasiljevic for a period of time. Right in kind of the meat of the schedule, if you like. So, they're really now at a point. Look, they're by no means out of it. I mean, you look at from 3 to 9, it's basically 7 losses or 8 losses. That's it. So you're in 9th place at the moment. They've lost 4 straight, but it doesn't mean they're out of it by any stretch. They could still – they've got the firepower to go on a run. We know how great they are at home. So, win all their – obviously win their home games, they get Trez back, win all their home games, see if they can steal a few on the road and they'll be in the hunt for the play-in tournament.
No, I'm by no means giving up on the 36ers as yet. And if Montrez is as seething as far as wanting to make a statement on the floor as what he has indicated on social media, there's going to be some fireworks when he gets back into the lineup. And The New Zealand Breakers are the first port of call with that on the weekend.